Hello and welcome to Tuesday, Juno Afternoon. My name is Scott and I will be your host here on Tuesday today, and looks like I'll be doing this on Tuesdays as time goes on. Got a great show lined up for you today. I have Kelly Manning and Chris Taylor here from the Canvas to tell us about a fundraising dinner. And also we have folks, we have Emily Wall will be coming in to tell us about One Night Stand. Kara Nelson will be coming in from Haven House to tell us about matching grants program they have going on. And the JDS crew from Spamalot will be in here. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. November 14th of each year could be Dr. Walter Sobolev Day in Alaska. A bill creating the holiday was recently filed by members of the Alaska House of Representatives. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, it's one of at least two bills involving Native issues lawmakers are set to consider during the legislative session.
The Reverend Dr. Walter Sobolev was a cultural and spiritual standard bearer for the Tlingit people, who passed away in 2011 at the age of 102. He was the first Alaska Native pastor in Juneau at a time when the town was segregated. He opened his church to all, describing it as a happy ministry. Sobolev was Grand Camp president of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. He also chaired Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Council of Traditional Scholars. The Institute's new cultural center in downtown Juneau will be named for him. It's under construction and is expected to be complete by this time next year. Sobolev's daughter, Janet Burke, says the family is thrilled Alaska lawmakers want to name a day after him. That day, November 14th, was his birthday.
We would be very proud to have that happen. I think it's a really cool thing.
Another bill filed by state lawmakers would make about 20 Alaska Native languages official state languages. Sitka Democratic Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins is a prime sponsor of that bill. He says it's largely symbolic, but hopefully meaningful to those trying to revitalize Native languages.
It's incredibly important work. I mean, you lose a language and you lose a way of understanding the world.
English is currently the only official language of Alaska. Both bills will be introduced when the legislative session gavels in on January 21st. For National Native News, I'm Casey Kelly in Juneau.
The Spokane Tribe in Washington State has adopted strict new water quality standards that may be impossible for upstream polluters to meet. Steve Jackson has more.
The new tribal standards seek to limit chemicals in the Spokane River that include PCBs, which have been linked to cancer. The new standards for PCBs are no more than 1.3 parts per quadrillion. The concern was prompted by efforts to protect a population that eats a high level of fish in its daily diet. To put it into perspective, the levels of PCBs meet Washington State standards when the Spokane River flows into the state from Idaho, but PCBs enter the waterway in large amounts where the river flows through Spokane. Brian Crossley is the Water and Fish Program Manager for the Spokane Tribe.
By the time it flows through Spokane and we take the water test below Spokane, we've increased threefold in our PCB levels just by going through the city of Spokane. And so we're getting that from, you know, wastewater discharges, but we're also getting it just from sources running off street.
PCBs were used in a number of products as a lubricant but were banned in the 1970s. But sources remain all over the environment. Crossley says he does not know if the tribe has any immediate plans to use the new standards to challenge the city of Spokane's release of pollution into the river. Given the current technology, the new standards would be impossible to attain since current testing equipment cannot detect PCBs at the minute amounts in the new tribal standards. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
The Sundance Film Festival kicks off Thursday in Park City, Utah. One of the films selected is Drunktown's Finest by filmmaker Sidney Freeland. The coming-of-age story is set on a reservation and features three Navajo characters. The 85-minute film in English and Navajo will debut on Saturday. January 1975, President Gerald Ford signed the Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act to further the self-determination of Indian communities without terminating their relationship with the federal government, which included operating their own programs and schools. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PICCLICKGIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on 104.3 KTOOM FM, your place for news and talk here in the capital city. My name's Scott Burton. I'm the Tuesday host here of Juno Afternoon, and I've been joined in the studio here by Kelly Manning and Chris Taylor from the Canvas. Welcome, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming down, and thanks for everything that you do in the community. The Canvas is a great organization. Tell us about it, Chris.
The Canvas is a community art studio that was that's a part of Reach here in Juno, and it's basically the gist of it is arts for everybody. So we have day-hab programming for artists who experience disabilities during the day, and then we have community-based programming in the evening, oftentimes taught by the same teachers that are teaching our day-hab classes, and we offer a very wide range of classes on both sides. I have a list here of some community classes that I thought I could go over with you guys.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have just in the next couple weeks, and all of this is online on our website, but over the next couple weeks we have quite a few classes starting up. Tonight we have a glass on glass mosaics class, which is really a really cool process and taught by Marianne Manning.
Okay.
And that class is still got a couple of spots left, so if anyone was kind of thinking about doing it, it's jump in and give it a shot.
And glass on glass.
Yeah, it's a really cool process. So it's got the look of stained glass.
Okay.
Because you're basically, instead of doing mosaic on like a solid surface like a board,
uh-huh.
you're going to be doing it on a piece of clear glass so that the light can shine through the backside. But so it's similar to stained glass in that it interacts with the light that way, but you're not using soldering or lead, you're just using grout to fill in like you would with the mosaic piece. So it's
cool.
Kind of a hybrid that gives a really nice effect, and it's pretty fun to do.
All right.
It gives you that same effect as stained glass, but you don't have to have all those soldering materials and tools that are required for doing stained glass.
Yeah, sounds a little more accessible.
Yeah. It is, sense. Yeah, and it's a great class for anyone that wants to kind of get their feet wet into the art world of the glass area. It's a great class to start with, and we had a lot of beginners and a lot of people that have come back for a second time around and come out with some really cool projects at the end too. So.
And Chris, remind me what you do at the Canvas.
I'm the artistic coordinator there.
Okay.
So I do the class scheduling, working with artists, bringing artists from the community into our day hub classes and bringing them into the community classes, and working to find artists to exhibit in our gallery space, working with them when they have their show and helping set up the exhibits and just spreading the word throughout Juneau.
Sounds like a great job.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool job. I like it a lot.
And Kelly, what do you do there?
So I'm the director of the Canvas and the community programs.
Okay.
And so the Canvas is a big part of our community programming at Reach, where we're bringing opportunities for people who experience disabilities to integrate with the community at large and participate and be a part of their community that they're in. And so the Canvas is a big part of that. You know, it's really where we bring people together on the common ground of the arts. And so my role as the director is to, you know, manage and, you know, make sure that we have the people where we need them to be so we can make those opportunities happen.
Sounds like you both have pretty great jobs.
We do.
Oh, yeah, can't complain. It's a great place to be.
It's a fun place, yeah.
Great. And I understand you have a fundraising dinner coming up.
We do.
You want to tell us about that already or anything else you want to share?
It could be good to jump into the fundraiser, and then if we have some time, I can list a couple more classes.
That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, every year we've done the Canvas Fundraiser Dinner, and it's been a longstanding tradition. And last year we did a great dinner. It was a really fun event, and we are doing some of the same things as last year. We're partnering with the Baranoff Hotel. They're going to have one of their chefs provide their services to cook the meal for us.
Okay.
So that's a great partnership that we've been able to establish with the Baranoff, and so you know the food's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom Loker, who's been a long supporter of the Canvas, is going to be providing piano music for us.
All right.
And he's always wonderful. And then Andrea Mogul at Pie in the Sky is donating pies for dessert. And that was a big hit last year, for sure. And so we kind of did it a la carte. You had the opportunity to kind of pick from the different options. And so we're planning to do something very similar again this year with Andrea. And one of the fun things that we started last year is our pottery studio manager, Brandon Howard, mm-hmm. created plates. He made the plates and then put one of our Reach artists' work on one of their designs on the plate. So you get a canvas plate that's custom-made
awesome.
Just for dinner, and your dinner is served on it, then we'll send you home with your canvas plate. And so this year he's partnered with one of our students, Tammy, and they're working on the plates diligently now so that everybody, when you buy your dinner plate, you actually keep the plate when you go home.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So where is the dinner taking place?
It will be at the canvas in the gallery and studio. We'll have a silent auction followed by dinner. Right in the canvas, so you get to see the space, and we welcome people to come. Last year, we were committing the funds towards getting new cabinets, which was a really big project mm-hmm. for us to streamline the space. So, you know, anybody that wants to come and see how that turned out, you can come and see the new cabinets and get a feel for how that's benefited the space. And then this year, we're going to commit. We've kind of been working our way through the canvas space on updating things. So we updated the gallery. Now we got the new cabinets. And our next project is to do some updates in the pottery studio. So people that commit this year to coming and supporting us through the fundraiser dinner, those funds are going to then go towards upgrades in the pottery studio, organizing the space a little better, getting some new equipment, things of that nature.
So good food. You come away with a custom handmade plate.
Yeah.
Sit in the gallery. Nice atmosphere in there.
Yeah.
Live music.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow, sounds like a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's an awesome event.
It's February 8th, is that right?
Correct. That's correct. February 8th from 6 to 9 p.m. Tickets are $50.
All right.
Yeah.
And where should people go to get tickets?
You can get them at the Canvas, and so you can either give us a call or stop by the gallery, and somebody can check you out and get your ticket for the dinner.
Sounds good. And I'm thinking of the space in the gallery. About how many seats have you had in the past, and do you expect to have this year?
Well, we're anticipating that we could get about 60, 65. And so, you know, definitely it's not an unlimited event.
Right.
You know, there's limited seating, so you want to get on top of it if you're interested in joining us, for sure.
Sounds good. Well, thank you. February 8th, 6 to 9 at the Canvas Dinner Music Art Fundraising.
Yeah.
What else do you got going on, Chris?
So a couple other classes, just we can talk along the lines of the ceramic studio,
mm-hmm.
Things that are coming up. Brandon Howard's got a throwing big class starting up this Wednesday, and it's definitely going to be a class that goes. We've got enough people in it, and we have
mm-hmm.
a couple more slots left. That'll be a class where it is recommended that you have knowledge of throwing and some strong throwing skills to do it. But if you're looking to throw something larger than you've thrown before, I think everything's going to be I think he said like 10 pounds or more is what he's hoping to teach people to throw with, which is quite a lot of clay, and you can get a pretty big piece with that class.
It's a good opportunity to build your skills. If you've taken some, you know, classes or, you know, done a little bit of ceramics, it's a good opportunity to learn some new throwing skills that maybe you haven't developed just yet. Good chance
okay.
for that.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
And then we've got a beginning wheel class with Louise Kunstada, who's our weekend teacher. She's a fantastic instructor, and that's a good class for anyone to jump in and learn the process of throwing. But also, if you've thrown before and just want to take your skills further, that's a great class for either of those two types of students. And then we also have this weekend, we have a Clinkit beadwork class that's going to be going on. It's a weekend workshop, so it'll be two Saturdays in a row with Ricky Tagaban, who's a very talented
mm-hmm.
fabric artist here in Juneau, so he'll be teaching that one. And then we also have, starting this Thursday, we have a painting with acrylics basics class with Anari Kalanen, who is an instructor both on the Dayhab side and the community side, and fantastic artist and very knowledgeable. That class is going to be kind of teaching people how to work with acrylics in a way that makes them feel or look a little more like oils.
Mm-hmm.
Acrylic paints can tend to look somewhat they're plastic, so they can look plasticky or kind of dead.
Sure.
Playing with different mediums and applications, she'll teach you how the basics of painting and painting with acrylics, and then how to take it a little bit further. So again, that's a great class for beginners or people who or for people who want to take it further.
Great. Yep. A lot of stuff going on at the Canvas.
Definitely.
And what's your website again?
It's canvasarts.org.
All right. So I'm sure people can see all of these fine classes and learn more information about this fundraiser if they need it at canvasarts.org. And this fundraising dinner, again, will be February 8th from 6 to 9. Live music, custom art, good food. And all of that money goes towards programming like this. Specifically, you were saying some pottery equipment, it sounds like, this year?
Yeah, upgrading the pottery studio, making it a little bit more accessible, yeah.
Again, sounds like a great event and a great cause. Kelly Manning, Chris Taylor, thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 14th of January, 2014. It's the birthday of Albert Schweitzer, born in Kaisersberg in the province of Alsace-Lorraine, 1875. He was a musical prodigy. He was a theologian, an expert on Bach and Goethe and Kant. And when he was 21, Schweitzer made a plan. For the next 9 years, he would devote himself to learning and religion, but once he turned 30, he would spend the rest of his life serving humanity. And so, on his 30th birthday, he went off to medical school. His wife, Helena, trained as a nurse at the same time, so she could help him with his work, and in 1913 they set sail for French Equatorial Africa to set up a hospital in La Baronnais in Gabon. He paid for the hospital himself out of money he'd earned giving concerts. It was a rustic place, even dirty by Western standards. They worked by kerosene lamps, no electricity except in the operating rooms, no phones, no radios. Patients brought their family members to cook and care for them. Albert Schweitzer turned 90 years old in Gabon. He told his co-workers at his hospital, "I belong to you until my dying breath." He died 8 months later in the hospital that he'd built. He was buried near the banks of the Agoue River. The hospital now treats more than 35,000 people a year. It's the birthday of Emily Hahn, born St. Louis, 1905. She was one of the first women to get a degree in engineering from the University of Wisconsin at Madison in 1926, after which she and a friend dressed up as men and drove across the country in a Model T Ford. She was a woman always on the move. One of her catchphrases was, "Nobody said not to go." She became a writer for the New Yorker magazine, a career that lasted almost 70 years. Moved to Shanghai, became a correspondent there, took up smoking opium, had an affair with the head of British Army Intelligence in Hong Kong, had a daughter by him, moved back to New York City. And through all of this, Emily Hahn wrote 54 books and more than 200 articles for The New Yorker. She wrote about diamonds, about the Philippines, about primates. She wrote about her wartime romance in her book China to Me. And when she died at the age of 92, her granddaughter gave her eulogy in which she said, "Chances are your grandmother didn't smoke cigars and let you hold wild role-playing parties in her apartment. Chances are she didn't teach you Swahili obscenities. Chances are that when she took you to the zoo, she didn't start whooping at the top of her lungs as you passed the gibbon cage. Sadly for you, your grandmother was not
Emily Hahn. Here's a poem for today by Alfred Lord Tennyson, three verses from his long poem, In Memoriam. Dark house by which once more I stand, here in the long, unlovely street, doors where my heart was used to beat so quickly, waiting for a hand that can be clasped no more. Behold me, for I cannot sleep, and like a guilty thing I creep at earliest morning to the door. He is not here, but far away the noise of life begins again, and ghastly through the drizzling rain on the bald street breaks the blank day. Three verses from In Memoriam by Alfred Lord Tennyson. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right, and you are listening to 104.3 KTOO, and this is Tuesday, Juno afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton, and I've been joined in the audience, in the studio here with Emily Wall. Welcome, Emily.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I was wondering if you could start off by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself. What do you do in our community?
Good. Well, I'm a writer and a professor. I teach at the university. I teach creative writing mostly. I'm teaching two intro classes right now, one online, one on campus, and I love that class. I love working with new writers. We're having so much fun already.
Good.
And then I also write. I write poetry. I have two books of poems out, and I'm starting a third. I'm working on a manuscript right now, and community readings, that kind of stuff.
Wow, you're busy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Excellent. And you're here to tell us about One Night Stand. Is that tonight?
It is tonight from 5 to 7, although it'll probably be an hour.
Okay. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So a year ago, I applied for a Juno Arts Council Individual Artist Grant, and I was really fortunate to get one. And the part of the grant requirements are that you do some kind of public presentation to talk about how the money was used and what you're doing with your project. And that's tonight. So there's a series of us, I think, going all month. So I'm going to just do a short talk about my new book manuscript, probably read some poems, talk about how I use the money, and then I'd really like to kind of see what people in the group are, other people are thinking about their own projects and how they might want to use funds.
Oh, great. That sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I have some more questions for you about your writing process and teaching and all that. But before we go there, I was wondering if you would consider reading for us something that people might hear, something that people might hear tonight at the One Night Stand.
Sure. I'll read a poem. Part of my project is women have been giving me their birth stories, their journals, and I'm turning them into poetry.
And interesting.
It's sort of the core portion of this new book, and I'm really excited about it and really grateful to these women for sharing their stories. One of the first ones was Shayna Rower, who's a doula in town and had a very beautiful birth with her second son, Henry, at home. So this poem is written for her, and it was just published in this journal, so I'll just read it out of here. Henry's birth for Shayna. Henry rests upon the floor of the world as you rock and open and sing into a feral place where you hold onto the counter, touch the cold blue tiles, small ponds of quiet that will bring Henry resting upon the floor of the world. Your body begins to fill, to flood blood, sweat, urine, everything you wring into a feral place where you hold your goodbyes. Everyone else waits for hello as you feel him leaving the cradle of your being, Henry, resting upon the floor of the world. And then it's time to let go. The midwife has told you this moment would come, and yet you linger in that feral place where you hold your hands in the rich loam of birth, feel the bold cracking of your body,
a rock deep and sweet as Henry, resting upon the floor of the world, in a feral place where you hold and hold and hold.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
It just made me think of literature in general and how good literature makes you feel things, right? You don't just read it, you feel it.
I hope so. You know, this project is most special for me because other people's stories, and so I'm always quite anxious, you know. And, of course, I gave Shana the poem before I showed anyone else, and
right.
She loved it. So then I felt, okay, that's what matters, you know, if she feels like it's right and if it hopefully makes anybody else feel something. I read this on Sunday at the library reading and someone cried, so I felt good about that.
Yeah, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Speaking of your poetry, can you tell us, I've spoken with you a little bit about your writing process. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? I think it's interesting. You're a very dedicated writer.
Yeah, you know, my students and I talk about that a lot. I really think it's just dedication. That's really the secret. So I get up at 4, sometimes 3:30 in the morning, and it's crazy, I know.
So impressed by that.
I have 3 children and a full-time job, so that's my writing time. And I also think it's really, for me, it's really important before I get into my headspace of the day. I can't do anything else first. I can't look at email. I, like, make a cup of coffee, go to my writing desk, and then I try to spend a half hour to an hour writing, although during finals time doesn't happen at all.
Right, right.
But most of the time I try to do that. So my process is that I usually begin by reading, which is really important to me. And it's often kind of what I think of as rhythm reading. I'm not actually reading the poems. Like, I don't really know what they're saying. It's more of absorbing the cadence of language. It kind of helps me get into that space. And then I'll write if I can, if not, it doesn't happen every day, work on revision, that kind of thing.
Wow.
That's sort of how it happens.
And, yeah, your advice to your students, right? That's the only way to do it is to write, right?
You just have to do it. Yeah, there's a million reasons not to do it. And a lot of fear, I think, is the big thing. There's a great Annie Lamott quote. I don't know if you know her work. I love her. And she says that there's this neighborhood of her mind that's her fear, that she's bad, and she calls it her crack neighborhood. So she says, I try not to, like, get out of the car in the crack neighborhood, like, you know, because it's just so frightening. That concept of, like, every time you sit down thinking, can I do it? Is it going to be good enough?
Right.
And just finding the time to even sit at the desk. Like, it's, you just have to make yourself do it.
Yeah, Ernestine Hayes once told me, the muse is never going to come find you.
Mm-mm.
The only way to find the muse is to sit down and type or to write.
Absolutely.
How do you divide your time between, you said you're writing a novel as well, right?
No, nope, not writing a novel. Just, I'm working on a manuscript of poetry.
Oh, okay. So you spend almost all your time on poetry.
I do. Writing a novel is on my bucket list. But I think I would need time in a way that I don't have time in my life right now to do that.
Right. I hear you.
At least for me, that kind of writing. Poetry is kind of great that way because you can draft a poem in an hour and keep going back to that poem. Usually it takes me months to finish it, but I can do it in short little bursts, you know, which is kind of what I have right now.
And also, speaking of students and teaching, you're teaching a couple intro classes that you say you really are enjoying. Which ones are those?
This is the English 261 Introduction to Creative Writing.
Okay.
And intro students are just, it's so much fun for me because I feel like the biggest leaps happen in the intro class. Not that they don't happen later, but they, you know, they come in often without a lot of experience, but a lot of enthusiasm, and I love that about students. They're sort of willing to try anything, and they don't necessarily have big notions about who they are as writers yet. So I ask them to do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Perfect.
And they're totally up for it. They will, like, sit and write a poem in 5 minutes and then share it with each other. And that kind of bravery and joy is totally feeds me as a writer, watching them go through that.
Oh, that's excellent. I'm glad you enjoy your work so much.
I love it. I'm really lucky to have this job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of UAS and classes and time, there's still time to sign up for classes. I don't know how your numbers are in particular, but this is week one out there at UAS.
Yeah, mine are full.
Are they?
But yeah, if anyone's still, like, on the fence, because I know you have a class that's fantastic, your nature writing class, students could probably still jump into that.
Yeah, I still have room. It's online course, online nature writing.
I know.
We're going to prove it can be done.
Yeah. But yeah, I haven't taught that one. I've taught a lot of online. I'm teaching one right now. And some of the best writing I've seen is from online students. They seem to be super motivated and dedicated and often have busy, full lives as well.
And there, I wonder if it's something about the anonymity of writing for folks that you don't really know or have to go in front of in class. I wonder if that has anything to do with that.
It definitely might help some students. You know, one thing I love about online is you get 100% participation. You know, in class, there's always some students who are fearful or shy of critiquing or sharing their work. And online, everybody does. And maybe it's that I don't have to look at you. I'm just typing.
Right.
But the critiques and the work tends to be really honest and interesting in my experience.
All right.
Yeah.
So One Night Stand tonight. Remind me of the time again.
It's 5 o'clock at the Jack.
At the Jack right over here across the street. And it's because you were a recipient of an individual artist grant from the Jack.
Yeah.
From the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, a fine organization. And listeners, you can go listen and talk to Emily Wall there tonight. Emily, is there anything else that you would like to add?
Just that I'm really grateful to the Arts Council for doing this kind of supporting of artists. I know many artists and writers who have gotten grants, and it's a wonderful program.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, well, Emily, thank you so much for your time, and we'll look forward to hearing you tonight.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. All right. You are listening to KTOO-FM here in the capital city. This is Juno Afternoon with your host, Scott Burton. And I'm here in the studio with folks from Haven House, June Degnan, the president of the board, and also Kara Nelson, the co-director. Welcome, you two.
Good afternoon.
It's nice to see you, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for asking us. A little bit about Haven House. It's been coming for a long, long time. I guess in the early beginnings, it was a dream about 30 years ago of a resident here. It was Ellen Campbell, who was a volunteer at the correctional center. And she knew that this would be needed in Juneau. And it worked its way up the ranks. And in 2010, we formed Haven House, Juneau, as a charitable nonprofit, 501c3, with a 9-member board. And we started the work of putting it together from scratch. Because we knew there was a need in the community, and especially for women exiting prison. And the statistics showed that within a 3-year span, most women would return to prison because there wasn't anything for them. There wasn't a safety zone for them. And so working with that, we have a volunteer board, each coming to us with different talent and highly dedicated. And so we've moved along. And yesterday, we acquired our dream house, our 6-bedroom house. So now we have a facility. And that's just been a prayer answered for all of us. And I feel that we wouldn't have gotten there if we didn't have the community support.
For sure.
We have a lot of entities that support our efforts because they know it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we are today. And we were able to get 2 CAPSIS grants, one in 2012 from the Legislature for Planning, and then the second one last year, and added to that. And we've gotten a number of donations. So because we've gotten the house, we now have come to a point where we need matching funds. So I'll pass that on to Kara, and she can explain the matching fund situation. Kara?
Well, we have been blessed by the Juneau Community Foundation and a donor, the Gangueen Foundation, that has placed a $10,000 matching donation through the Community Foundation so that we can furnish the home and get everything we need to make it a, just a nice home for women to live and heal and have a safe place while they work through what they need to get back on their feet.
I hear you. And is that known as recidivism when an individual...
You said it well. I can never say that word.
...goes back to prison. I understand it's a huge problem in this state. Well, nationwide, but in the state especially. And it seems like programs like these are very important.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you maybe tell our listeners a little bit... Let's take an individual who's coming out of prison. How do they enter your program? How can somebody find out more about it? How does that all work?
Well, first of all, kind of to back up a little bit, I have a unique perspective on this whole situation. I have actually been in many prisons and am a felon myself, so this is a big passion of mine, just to help others find that hope and see that it can be done and have a really inside knowledge of the workings of the system and outside, and bringing people to that reentry transitional period of bringing the different sources in our community together to make that happen. And so we've been in contact with the different probation officers at the Highland Mountain Correctional Center. We're really working closely with the Juneau Probation Office, who are very supportive and just been great to work with. We have our application out there, and then there's going to be an interview process. So someone would fill out the application, and they would want to contact their local probation officer in the correctional facility or even out in the field offices. And then we would contact them and see them in person and do an interview. And, you know, we want to have a very healing home of people that want to change and, sure. and need that safe place to continue doing what maybe they've already started in prison or in the community. So a lot of times people just don't have anywhere to go. They go back, you know, to unhealthy situations.
Right, and that's not going to help at
right.
all, is it? How long might an individual stay in the house?
Up to 2 years.
Wow.
Of course, we're going to work with people and make sure that everything up to that point is going to, you know, make them stable to carry on and live out their life successfully. So.
All right. June, did you have something to add to that?
Well, to me, it's an option that hasn't been there before. So mm-hmm. we're the first in Juneau to offer this, and we're able to do it mainly from my part because the community supports it. So we've got the umbrella of the community mm-hmm. wanting it, and so we're the resource that's taking it and making this dream come alive. And it has been part of my dream also.
And it's seemed, from what I've read, it's been a long road.
Yes.
What have been some of the biggest challenges for you two?
Well, I've been on it since the beginning,
uh-huh.
and it was looking at a concept that would fit the entire area. And so you have to look at the entire state and look at the incarceration system, and which in America is excessive and unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, this is my answer to that we need to change from the entire system. And so rather than just condemning our entire justice system, it's to do something.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was said, it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.
Sure, sure.
So this is my way of approaching the incarceration system, saying we have too many nationwide, too many in Alaska, but let's do something. And while we're making that transition, here's Haven House,
mm-hmm.
you know, on your side to help that rather than be someone just throwing nasty remarks at them, but to say we care too.
Sure. Sure. Well, it sounds like a great opportunity. You have the physical house now, and now it's time to make it comfortable and a livable space.
Right.
And that sounds like the next challenge.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, from my aspect, I look at it since we are faith-based, I look at it that it took courage to do this,
mm-hmm.
faith, and risk
mm.
on the part of the board to step out to say, yes, we will work together and we will build consensus and do the research. So it took courage, faith, and risk to get us this far, and we're not going to give up yet.
Well, keep right. up the great work.
Thank you.
So how can our listeners contribute to this organization?
Well, just the,
or to the matching grant.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have the matching grant out there. But also, you know, we need volunteers. We need volunteers on different committees, whether that's, you know, just to contact us and email us, and we can find out where maybe your talents might work best, you know, if that's fundraising or in-house programming or just mentoring. We are working with a lot of different organizations, but it takes a lot of volunteer and people that have the passion to help others that are in that situation. So.
All right.
Yeah.
And what is it, an email or your website? Where should they
Haven
go first?
HavenHouseJuno@gmail.com.
All right. Haven House, one more time?
HavenHouseJuno@gmail.com.
All right. HavenHouseJuno@gmail.com.
And we also have HavenHouseJuno@.blogspot. I believe. Oh my gosh. Okay. And of course, we have a Facebook page that's updated quite often and kind of
right.
gives current things going on. So.
Great. Well, I really appreciate you two coming into the studio. Thank you for all of your hard work and congratulations on getting the house. Is there something that you would like to add that we may not have covered?
No, thank you for this time. So we can get our message out there.
You're welcome. Keep up the good work you
do,
and thank you. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on KTOO-FM in the capital city. This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton, and I am here with the cast of Spamalot. Take it away.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That sounded great. Can you go down the line and please introduce yourselves?
I'm Jacob Riddle. I go to Yakuski Dakahiti Alternative High School. I am King Arthur.
All right.
My name is Megan Wright. I go to JDHS, and I play Patsy.
My name is Brita Fagerstrom. I also go to JDHS, and I play Lady of the Lake.
My name is Rebecca Hassler. I go to Thunder Mountain, and I play Sir Lancelot.
Uh-huh. My name is Robert Newman. I go to Juno Douglas High School, and I play Sir Robin the Brave, which is ironic because he is not brave at all.
So Spamalot, who chose it? How did it come to be?
Well, Mrs. Moore, JDHS's drama department director, she has always liked the show, and she wanted to do the show, but it's a really, really big production. And so mm-hmm. she talked to Barb Mayer and was like, hey, do you want to do a play together? And Barb was like, yeah, that sounds totally awesome. And then Mrs. Moore said, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to do Spamalot, and this is a really big show. Do you think we could do that? And he's like, yeah. And so that's how it was. It was Mrs. Moore's general idea, but it's still a collaboration.
All right. Are you all having fun?
Definitely.
So much fun.
What is the best part of it? And remember to introduce yourself before you come up and
well, this
us.
Is Jacob. For me, the best part being is that I moved up here from the lower 48 uh-huh. was the opportunity to meet people from all the schools as opposed to just only the kids that go to your school. It was nice to do something with some new faces.
Right. It's a collaboration, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is it the first one?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
First one with all three schools. This is Brita.
All right. And what have been some of the, so I guess meeting new people from the different schools, mm-hmm. learning different acting styles, what else have you enjoyed about the play?
I think the thing that I've enjoyed the most about the play is, like, I mean, we talked about, I mean, collaborative and having all these people, and I think getting a more collective sense of community, I think that's really important. I feel like since we've had the two high schools, I mean, we've had two with Yakus and JD, but Thunder Mountain, since that's become a new school, I feel like there's been a lot of rivalry between the two, especially when it comes to sports. And
right.
I think that it's really important to remember that we're all high school students and we all care about the arts and we care about sports. So this has been a really good opportunity for the community to kind of blend together to create something for us all to enjoy.
Excellent. I like that. I'm trying to think if maybe sports teams should take, you know, take some lessons. Like
yeah. Do a little co-op maybe.
Yeah, let's get together and have a joint team. What have been some of the challenges of this production?
This is Robert. The hardest part for me has been the Monty Python British accent.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, this is Rebecca. I totally agree with Robert. It's been so hard, and especially for me because, you know, I'm playing a male character, so my voice has to be lower than it is. So doing things like singing in a low voice with a British accent is really difficult.
All right, you set us up. We have to hear some.
Oh, man.
It's pretty good. She's pretty good.
No.
Anybody? It's a witch.
It's a witch.
What a great series of movies that this is based off of. What are some things that you like about the playwriting in general or some of the songwriting for this musical?
It's so quick. Yeah? Just everything is so fast-paced. It's all around really nicely written, very well. I enjoy it thoroughly. It's great humor. Some of it gets a little bit edgy for the kids, but we've cleaned it up a lot. Like, we've cleaned it up quite a bit for the school, so that way you can bring everyone to it. But it's still got the humor that I think everyone, all age groups, can enjoy. Or fully appreciate, I suppose.
It's Monty Python. It's all those jokes that you love.
Mm-hmm.
Black Knight.
He actually gets his limbs cut off,
which is coming for that.
Cool.
Yeah.
This is Brita, and I think that another really interesting thing about our show is that we have so much going on. Like, it, as Jacob was saying, it's a very fast-paced show. A lot of it's very quick wit, and we incorporate a lot of the really funny slapstick parts of Monty Python, like the Black Knight, his limbs actually cut off in the show. We have huge tap numbers. We have people being lifted. We have all sorts of crazy props going on, people slapping each other with fish. It's a really, really intensive show, and I think it's amazing that we've had this production that we can do because of all the schools. And, yeah, it's been really fun.
Excellent. So how about the logistics? Where is it? When is it? How do people get tickets? All of the above.
Well, I have a little poster right here. It says, Monty Python Spamalot. And it's 2 weekends only, the last 2 weekends of January. The opening night is Friday, January 21st at 7 o'clock.
24th.
Friday, January 24th at 7 o'clock. And then we have two other performances that Saturday, January 25th. 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Then the next weekend, Friday, January 31st at 7 o'clock, and Saturday, February 1st at 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock. And on January 31st, that second Friday, there's a medieval costume contest.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And it says here that there's going to be prizes for the winners.
Wow, that sounds like fun. If somebody wanted to get that information again, where should they go?
They can go to jdhsdrama.com.
Right, jdhsdrama.com for all of those fine details.
Tickets can be they can be purchased online at the Jack and at Hearthside Books.
And
all right.
Cast members are also selling tickets, so if you run into a cast member, then you can buy tickets from them.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. It sounds like you all are having a lot of fun, and it sounds like the production will show that.
Thank you very much.
Fun. You're welcome, and good luck with the production.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
That's all for Juno Afternoon today. I've run out of time. We have some great guests tomorrow. Please tune in at 3 o'clock. And here is All Things Considered.